San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, buddy. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on Good Night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB or tune in radio, you can hear this show as it airs on any device. And, of course, all these podcasts are commercial-free on iowamoney.com and Apple Podcasts, and also at the 760kfmb.com website. Now time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire, accomplished marathon runner, a best-selling author, a lecturer, a philanthropist, and a family office expert advising several high-net-worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. Looking forward to the premiere of The Battle of the Sexes up in L.A.
Yeah, this show and next, we're going to be pretty much sports-heavy because, obviously, we're going to see Billie Jean King and Emma Stone and Steve Carell.
I'm hoping Elton John's going to be there.
That's what I'm thinking, too, because they're friends, and I know some of his music is in the movie. Of course, we have seen it already.
We've seen
the press screening. And so there you have it. Really, really cool things happening. And let's see, we got a really cool, some cool shows coming up. We've got to have the owner of the Padres coming up in October, Ken Kramer of About San Diego fame. His show aired on KPBS and NBC for many, many years, his segment. And we've got the chair of the Board of Trustees, La Jolla Playhouse, Margaret McBride, noted literary agent, coming up. And so some really cool shows. In addition to this one tonight, and I think folks are going to love this, especially with the advent of the football season and, of course, the Chargers' auspicious first game last
The more things change, Joe, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. But in any case, we have on the line, the author of this great book was just released in August, and it's going to be the focus of the show tonight. This gentleman, he's a freelance writer, editor, and he's also written for New York Observer, GQ, Men's Journal, Wall Street Journal, Town and Country, ESPN.com. He's a friend of, Don Van Natta Jr. was read the book and has one of the comments on the back, Richard, so we can talk a little bit
about
Don
Van Natta.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
Yeah, one of my favorite people on the planet.
He won a prize. Hang on. So anyway, the gentleman who on the line is Rafi Cohen. Rafi, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, our pleasure. You're back in New York, right?
I am. I'm in New York right now.
Gotcha. The name of your book, by the way, is called The Arena, and it's the subtitle, Inside the Tailgating, Ticket Scalping, Mascot Racing, Dubiously Funded. That's the part we're going to focus on. And possibly Haunted Monuments, that too, of American sports. So, and also on the line from Colorado, he's been on the show before and always love having him on. Veteran journalist, you see him in the Reader all the time. He was with the UT and I think KUSI for a number of years too. But Don Bowder, Don, welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure to be here, Joe. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So, anyway, I do know in your book, I think on page 324, Rafi, you do reference the Billie Jean King, Bobby Riggs event. And, of course, we always hear it's only a game except when it isn't. Well, these things sometimes take on a political magnificence of their own, and there's an event that comes along every so often. I guess you could say the Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor spectacle certainly grabbed attention, didn't it?
Yeah, I think, we always hear people tell athletes, shut up and play, or it's just a game, or, stick to sports and all these things. But that's taking for granted the fact that these are such big, they're such big platforms. These are enormous platforms where messages are conveyed and politics can be transmitted as well.
Sure,
intentionally or unintentionally.
But what was the message that was conveyed in the Mayweather McGregor matchup? Because it confused me.
We're going to get into
it. It was make a lot of money, I think.
Yeah, it's funny. The last time Mayweather fought, Mayweather-Pacquiao. I was actually in San Diego reporting for this book when that fight happened, and I paid for that fight, and I've regretted it ever since.
Yeah.
Talk about money in my life. That was a life and financial lesson right there, which was never pay for another Floyd Mayweather fight. So I did not. I did not pay for this one.
But before we get more, we'll get into the politics and everything else. I want to just qualify who you are, how you got started, and, you know, you're about your life and writing and your education and everything, just so people know a little bit more about Rafi, like where you went to school and maybe about your career path.
Sure, absolutely. I grew up in New Jersey. I went to college out in St. Louis at Washington University in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Post-college, I sort of bounced around a little bit from delivering pizzas and substitute teaching to coaching a middle school girls basketball team to an 8-8 record. and then, you know, I was a PA on a TV show for PBS, and then I started really spending a little bit more of my energies and time focusing on writing. Ooh. I moved up to Boston and started working at a paper there, eventually made my way back to New York.
What was your first your first byline in a major publication that you got paid for that you can remember?
Ooh, my first byline in a major, you know what? My first byline in a major publication might have actually been New York Observer, which I would eventually become deputy editor of several years later. But I wrote a story. This is a little transgressive, perhaps.
That's all right.
It was about underground session wrestling, where it was a little club in Manhattan where men would go and pay women to wrestle them.
Kind of like Fight. Kind of like Fight Club,
yeah,
but underground.
Exactly.
How about? Have you ever heard of something
exactly
like that?
Right.
Don, did you ever hear of anything like that in your life? I never even knew that stuff.
I haven't. I've noticed that Rafi Cohen realizes that professional sports is basically for money. So I'm surprised by nothing.
Well, I heard of cockfighting. I don't know what you would call this other thing in the basement with the women fighting, but I'll leave that to Donald Trump.
It's just another battle of the sexes,
Joe. I'll leave that to Donald Trump's imagination.
Exactly right.
But in any case, so let's get on to...
We titled it Raging Bell.
Raging Bell. There you go.
Oh,
there
I like
go.
That.
I like that.
So you've been writing ever since, several publications. Is this your first major book, or have you done a book or two before this?
No, absolutely no. This is my first book of any sort.
Wow.
That was the first time I've, you know, really found a project that seemed meaty enough to sink my teeth into for a few years.
Yeah.
But once my gaze settled upon stadiums or stadia, then I decided that I was going to commit.
So for our listeners, I guess you started in January 2015 and you went to February 2016. Unfortunately, you didn't go all the way to November to see the Cubs win the World Series, although you do mention it in the book because the book was just released in August. So you probably were writing all the way up and editing all the way up to June, July, right?
Oh, yeah. So January of 15 until February of 16, that was just reporting. That was just reporting and research.
Ah.
But then writing really only begun in 2016. And so I was writing, all the way up until, you know, Thanksgiving and then editing beyond that. But absolutely, not just for the Cubs, but for the Cavaliers too. You know, because when I spent time in those cities, the teams had not won. So I was aware that I might need a footnote or two in those chapters. And I wasn't sure who I was going to root for, to be honest with you, because, of course, you know, it's such a great story for the Cubs to win. But at the same time, I didn't want to mess with my copy too much.
Yeah. So the book really is you wanted to get into the underbelly of the fan experience, the operations of all these arenas, what goes into the, you know, the turf and the setup and everything else and the conversion from one sport to another. I mean, and of course, security. I heard one interview you did about security, and of course that you got into the bowels of Petco Park, I guess. And apparently, how many cameras do they have in these stadiums? Apparently, they could see the nose hairs that we in our nostrils.
It's amazing. No, and you're exactly right. The book, I mean, so much of the premise is in the subtitle, which I won't repeat because it's so long. That'll be the rest of the show.
Right.
But it really is that idea of taking a deep dive into everything but the game.
Right.
You know, because, once you stop watching the action on the field, you realize that there is so much drama that happens behind the scenes.
Right.
You know, whether it's the workers or the fans. And in Petco, I was very lucky to have been taken under the wing of a man named John Leese, who at the time was the head of security for the Padres. And he let me just trail him through Petco for an entire game. And it was amazing. The cameras you're referring to, you know, I don't have the exact number. I don't know if it's dozens or hundreds, but it felt like millions.
Yeah.
You know, that they're, you know, they had so many cameras up at the command center where they can literally see anything inside or outside of the ballpark. It was just incredible. You realize how big brotherish it is, not necessarily in the sinister way, but just in the they can legitimately see everything.
Yeah. Anyway, we're coming up on our break right now, but we're going to come back with Rafi Cohen, author of The Arena, and Don Bauder on the line. We're going to get into the financials of all these sports arenas right after this. Hang on. All right, we are back with It's Your Money and Your Life. On the line, we have from New York, Rafi Cohen, author of this new book called The Arena, all about the sports experience from the tailgating and ticket scalping all the way through the monuments to the haunted museums now of some ballparks and stadium. And, of course, Don Bauder in Colorado. And, of course, we're going to get into the financials as well. But we were last talking about Petco Park and security, and it's taken to a new level now, I guess, with 9/11 and everything else. Is this going on in most ballparks, Rafi?
Oh, yeah, after 9/11, you know, security, the dial was turned up to 11.
Yeah.
You know, they started taking it much more seriously just in terms of, you know, in the years afterwards, we started having the metal detectors, and, you know, the wanding and all, you know certain types of bags you can or can't bring in. I was talking to the executive from the Padres, actually, because I did that ride-along for security in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And was just asking him, you know, realistically, it seems like San Diego is less of a threat center, you know, than somewhere like New York or Philadelphia or L.A. And he said, absolutely, you know, that's true. But you can't, you know, you can't let your guard down,
right.
is what he said. You know, you have to take it just as seriously, whether that's, you know, for NFL games, having snipers on the roof and, you know, a hose nearby in case of chemical attack, which is, you know, what they did in the immediate aftermath of 9/11 around the first Super Bowl, or if it's just, you know, having wandings and pat-downs and that kind of thing and doing your due diligence to just turn around the kind of, like, basic, you know, the basic things like knives and whatnot that might have been coming in the stadium, not necessarily used or for malicious intent, but just, it's just a layer to keep it away.
Right. I think it's even more noticeable back east than it is at Petco, just from experience.
Well, now, you also were there for Military Day, and, of course, the Padres have started wearing the camouflage uniforms. That's what the first Sunday of every home season now, or what?
Were they masquerading as a professional baseball team?
Yeah, so they have at least for a little while, when I visited, there was a lot of excitement. It was right when, you know, Kemp and Kimbrell and everyone was on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool time to
That was quite a good joke.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. It lasted not as long, I think, as people would have liked. So military opening day exactly is the first Sunday of every season, the first home game, Sunday home game of every season. And then on every Sunday after that, I believe they wear the camo.
Now that goes league-wide. So my issue, and I think Zyron's as well, is, you know, it was uncovered that the military, the DO, Department of Defense, is probably paying a lot of money for these things, and they're using professional sports as a recruiting tool. And, you know, people have mixed emotions about that, including some retired officers that you cite in the book, right?
Yeah, you know, right. And so I think, I'm talking about Dave Zyron, the writer and columnist for The Nation, who was very generous with his time, speaking with me, as, you know, for the book. And he would take issue not only with the paid tribute, which is something we can definitely dive into as well, but he would bring up any sort of tributes as saying, what are the messages we are conveying? You know, are we beating the drum,
right,
you know, in one way or another for militarism and for war, because, you know, these things have meaning, you know,
right.
the messages we convey have impact. And,
right.
you know, they've always, you know, sports teams, the military have always known that sports games are a great way to recruit, you know, to align yourself with athletes, and you're seen in a positive light. It sort of reflects the team spiritness. But then obviously we go into the whole scandal when it was uncovered by the senators out of Arizona,
right,
that DOD and others were just paying money for these tributes, and that just takes it to a whole new level of cynicism.
Yeah. Did we ever get a figure on that? Do we know if are they still doing it? Do we know?
Well, they supposedly no. Supposedly they stopped immediately. But, you know, I've spent some time in the advertising world as well, doing things like branded content, which I'm sure is a term you're familiar with, which is basically, you know, when you're writing a story and doing it on behalf of a brand, of a,
right.
of a company. But it has to be labeled, right? Yeah, it has to say branded content or sponsored
or
by this person.
Sponsored by or advertorial or something.
Exactly. But so in my mind, the analogy I made was the DOD paying for these tributes, these supposedly, you know, from the heart tributes by the team, was basically camouflaged content. It was camouflaged
right.
propaganda
right.
because it was branded content that what you were never told was actually branded.
Right.
And that's, I mean, that's just disingenuous.
So when we go to these games yeah. and see, yeah, Captain Jack, is he still at the Padres, by the way? That was an interesting
No, he's in Arizona, but he was very, I mean, he was just so devastated when
yeah.
that came out.
Because he's a Vietnam
because,
vet,
you know,
prisoner of war.
So hard to try and, yeah, yeah, the Captain Jack, who of course started the military affairs department for the Padres,
right.
you know, he as a veteran of Vietnam, he knows that, you know, the public does not always hold the military in high esteem. So he's worked really hard to build up a good relationship,
right.
you know,
well,
between the public
and
the military.
I do like to see at certain games they'll bring in, they'll fill the upper deck, the whole sections with one side will be Marines, another side will be Navy recruits, you know. And that's nice to see that they're bringing out the recruits to see a ball game. I'm all for that. When they fill the entire field with the U.S. flag before a game, I go, who the heck is paying for this? I mean, where is that stored? Hey, you've seen that, right, Don? Do they do that in Denver, too, Don?
Oh, God, Denver, yes. And, of course, the fans in Denver, I mean, it's a religion in Denver,
yeah.
Not a sport. And so the fans tend to be pro-military, and,
yeah.
yes, it's their big buildup.
Yeah, yeah. And these flyovers and these leapfrogs where they're jumping out of the plane, you know, in the parachute. I mean, it's cool to see, but somebody's we're paying for it one way or another. I mean, obviously.
Well, my complaint.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
as taxpayers.
True. Yeah.
But my complaint is, as a longtime sports fan from the early 1960s when I was about 3 years old till now, I hate how it's transitioned from actual sport into more entertainment, or as Don says, even religion.
Well, now wait a minute, Bill Veeck. Look, sports.
No, he was an outlier.
No, well,
I mean, like this thing where a batter comes up to hit and they play his theme song. I can't stand it.
Well,
I can't stand that.
Look, yeah, but I mean, Bill Veeck. Look, it's
no, I know he hired Eddie Goodell, the midget.
Right, that's in the book.
I know,
but sports is entertainment. We're it is entertainment.
It's gone too far to the entertainment side, in my humble opinion.
Well. I mean, that's why I've...
Which is why I no longer support it the way I used to.
That's why I like the Aztec games more than the Chargers games.
Right, I love
games.
College sports.
Yeah, college football is...
Although you talk about being all about money, now there's college sports, basketball and football.
Well, Don makes that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it is...
Yeah, let me break in, if I may.
Please.
I've been writing a little bit recently. You know, I've written a lot about how organized crime was really... The owners of... Pro football were big gamblers,
mm-hmm.
and they were connected with organized crime and so on. And that's less true today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said something that some of my readers don't believe, which is I don't think games are fixed or points are shaved as much as they used to be. Because back in the days, in the early days, well, say in the 40s or 50s even, the players in the NFL were not that well paid. And they could be wooed and won by gambling. So you had more of that.
Mm-hmm.
And today, I don't believe that's so true because the players have such high salaries.
Right.
That I don't think that they probably fix games or shave points as much as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about college. Now, college,
mm-hmm.
that's where I would look for fixing games. And of course we had a big scandal at the University of San Diego in basketball here just a few years
Brandon
ago.
Brandon Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Boston
and,
College also.
So I would wonder about, you know, a player on a team, supposedly he's not being paid. He probably is getting paid something under the table, but, you know, he's not rich like a player for a pro team.
Yeah.
And would be more likely to be susceptible to some kind of a bribe. So I'd look for more of it in college.
Yeah. Rafi, what are some of the bigger frauds? Well, we're going to come up on another break in a little bit, but some of the bigger frauds that you've seen. I know you've got something on ticket scalping, and maybe you, when we come back from the break, you can get into that a little bit. And then I do want to get into the haunted monuments part of it and the dubious funding, because obviously it's very relevant to San Diego, because our Chargers are gone, and we have this big black hole in Mission Valley. We don't know where it's going. I mean, the Aztecs are there for another year and a half at least, but I'm not sure what the future is going to hold. But anyway, we're going to come back on our break right now. We're going to come back with Rafi Cohan, author of The Arena, all about the sports stadiums and everything related, and, of course, Don Bowder in Colorado, veteran journalist. So stay tuned. All right, we are back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and this is the time where Richard likes to thank our sponsors.
Big thank you to our sponsors. Couldn't do the show without them. As everybody knows, at the top of that list is UBS with Michael Courant. A big thank you to UBS. Also, our favorite CPAs on the planet. We've got two groups of them because we love CPAs. We've got Polito Epic CPAs, more traditional accounting and tax preparation firm up in San Marcos, as well as Jason Kruger's great CFO service firm, Signature Analytics. Also our great friend and huge college basketball fan, Joel Grushkin, with Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Now, all this money our sponsors make for you, how about you stash it at Mechanics Bank? Sean Puckett, of course, heads up the San Diego region of Mechanics Bank, a great niche market bank that serves wealthy families and families in the real estate space. Also, Tony Lombardi, the LG Experience in the Lombardi Group, helping wealth advisors make heroes out of CPAs to the CPA's very best clients. Paul Hines. Paul, well, he gets two credits. Number one, he's the CEO of Hearthstone Private Wealth Management, but also the catalyst behind SeniorSafeAndSound.org here in San Diego, helping to prevent the financial abuse of the elderly. Also, Elite Lifestyle Management, Michelle St. Clair's great company. For those of you who have no time, she'll help you get your most precious asset back. For those of you who need to get some things done that are hard to do, she'll take that burden off of you too, like getting us into the Billie Jean King and Battle of the Sexes premiere in Los Angeles where we needed extra tickets. Elite Lifestyle Management. And also, of course, Brenda Geiger, Geiger Law Office, specializing in asset protection and estate planning. And last but not least, Employee Benefits, Hub International, with Neil Staley. Now, I know a lot of our devoted listeners, Joe, skip dinner just to listen to us, so they're getting hungry about right now. How can we help them?
Well, we have the Very Good Food Foundation, headed up by Michelle Ciccarelli-Lirac, with their great events every year, the Very Good Night Dinner and foodie events throughout the year that are terrific. And then also Lestat's Coffee Houses, the one in Normal Heights, University Heights, a new one on University Avenue, all open 24/7, 365, with great food, great coffee, and great people watching. And I know many of these sponsors have been working with you, Richard, for many years with great success, right?
Going on three decades in some cases.
Yeah. Anyway, if you get over to iymoney.com, there's a sponsor tab with information about any or all of them, and I'm sure they can help you out in any of those areas that you may need. Now let's get back to Rafi Cohan and The Arena and Don Bowder in Colorado talking about all the scandals, excuse me, involving the sports stadiums and whatnot. You know, have you been following the Chargers situation here, Rafi? I mean, they're gone.
Yeah. I knew they were gone.
They were on last Monday night, and actually, I don't know who that other broadcaster was, but I could barely watch the game.
But it was still a typical Chargers finish. Yeah. It doesn't matter what city they're from.
Well, they came back. Now, wait a minute. They didn't.
They didn't come all the way back.
Well, they came back.
Joe, there's no moral.
Isn't that comforting?
Yeah, it is. There's no moral victories in football.
Well, I thought they were going to lose by two touchdowns, and they made it close. They only lost by field goal.
Yeah, that's
goal.
Good. It's like this year. I'm like, good. The Padres aren't going to lose 100. It was a good season.
They lost by missed field goal, blocked field goal. Anyway, I don't know. I've got mixed emotions about the Chargers. I do think their ownership leaves something to be desired. They were trying to hold up the public again for another sales tax increase to help fund a downtown stadium. And
I'd rather use the money to fix the potholes in the streets, but that's just my opinion.
Well, we're cleaning the streets now. We've got the hepatitis going on. So.
Exactly. There's another problem.
But let me ask you this, Rafi, because your last chapter is all about the empty stadium across the country, Silver Dome, which is near and dear to my heart. That's where my friend he was Joe Montana's left tackle.
Dan
Audick, back in 81, 82, and that stadium is a ghost town now, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, ghost town's maybe even a generous description for what it is. It's almost like an apocalyptic, I don't know, it's what you would expect if, you know, after the zombies attack.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
That's what the stadium looks like. And that's exactly what you don't want to wind up with on your hands, as you said. You don't want a silver dome on your hands.
Right.
But that's, it unfortunately happens way too often because, you know, there's a reason that stadiums become white elephants. You know,
yeah.
They cost money. They cost money to run, and actually, stadiums really don't make money even when they're fully functional and with an NFL team around.
Yeah.
They typically lose money, and you know, and as a city, you have to decide whether it's worth it to you to keep paying all those expenses on top of whatever debt is still owed on the stadium. I know San Diego is not yet clear from paying off, you know, all of the most recent renovations.
Well, Mr. Spano said, when you're in the pecking order of NFL owners in terms of wealth, he's down near 30, 31 or so.
Yeah, I think he's second or third from the bottom.
Yeah, out of, yeah. Well, that would be.
Out of 32.
Right.
Right, yeah.
So it's typically owning these sports teams, or it's usually syndicates or owner groups that they're made up of millionaires and billionaires, and they usually use them for tax advantages, right? And then they hope over time the capital gains will grow and they'll have a growing asset on their hands over 10, 20 years, whatever it is, right?
Well, and also the thing is that the stadiums themselves can add so much value to the franchise, especially when even as, you know, as I was just saying, they don't actually make money, but they don't need to make as much money if you're not paying for it,
yeah.
Which is why they typically do play this stadium game, you know, trying to hold up cities and municipalities or play one off of another to try and extort the biggest, you know, the biggest subsidy. There was an economist who I believe is Jeffrey Profiter, who pointed out to me that basically the math just changes because when you're building a stadium, you know, if something costs $1 to build and you're going to make 99 cents of revenue off of it, you're not going to build it.
Right.
However, if you're only paying half the cost, that means you're getting 99 cents of revenue off of 50 cents. And suddenly the calculus changes and you're willing to spend more money on a stadium, build more of a Taj Mahal type stadium that doesn't necessarily make economic sense, but can add value to your franchise because of the taxpayer subsidies that are seemingly always on offer. And in my opinion, good on San Diego. Congratulations to San Diego for not being held hostage.
Yeah.
Let me break in here.
Please.
Obviously, Rafi, I agree with you, and I've been writing on this for about 20 years. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
I'll even say it more strongly than you will. Using tax money to build stadiums for billionaires is a complete scam everywhere and always. But in the case of San Diego, I would love to say good for San Diego for voting the Chargers down. But the Chargers didn't want to win that election because
right.
They went up and they tried to make a deal in L.A. and Kroenke didn't want them. And they came back and the NFL said, well, you try to build a stadium in San Diego. And they did their darndest to make sure that they would not get approval of a stadium in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we think that, say, Fabiani was making stupid statements and Spanos was making stupid statements. That was designed so that they could lose that vote.
Well, there's
and
also...
And then they very intelligently split the business community by coming up with this wacky idea of a convadium, which the people in the hotel industry knew was utterly stupid.
Yeah.
And they did too. And so they lost the vote and they were
and then layer
rejoicing and went to LA.
Yeah, and then layer upon that this soccer entity that supposedly had 34 private meetings with the mayor, and the mayor wasn't all that so apparently he was in bed with the soccer people and he wasn't that anxious to keep the Chargers here either.
Absolutely. And I've got a column on this that actually will show up online tomorrow.
Oh.
And will be in print Thursday.
Ah.
And basic message is that territory in Mission Valley should go to the university because there's more economic heft to the community by having a university which will attract, you know,
more students and
companies to come to San Diego and so
right.
on. But the dumbest thing they could do, which is what they plan to do, which is to build another stadium. That is stupid. The stadium was opened in the 60s. It isn't really all that old by the standards of
Wrigley Field,
colleges.
Yeah.
The big universities are more than 80, stadiums are more than 80 years old. Some of them are more than 100 years old. And if you maintain them and if you expand them, of course, as your audiences expand, you can start with a stadium that's that old.
Yeah, we'll we're going to take a we got to take a little break. Though we're going to come back with Rafi Cohen, Don Bottom. We'll get Rafi's take on Qualcomm and Petco Park when we come back. Hang on. All right, we're talking about the Green Acres and the former Green Acres of professional sports arenas and stadium across the country. We've got Don Bowder on the line and Rafi Cohen from New York.
But Don, go ahead and finish that thought, because from my perspective as a San Diego State fan, I feel that with Soccer City and the Chargers leaving, who's really being thrown under the bus potentially is San Diego State University.
Right.
Well, Soccer City is, you know, that's they're trying to get away with paying very little for that.
Yeah.
Land, which of course is their angle on the scam part of the thing, but the university should get it, and the university because universities enhance the economy much more than, say, real estate, which is what they're planning with the Soccer City, and but the university would be very stupid, in my judgment, to tear down Qualcomm and try to build a smaller stadium.
Yeah, I don't think they will.
You know, as I say, in professional sports, it's true that that these people only want a stadium to last 25 years, and then they go back to the public and they want more money to build another one. But in college football, these stadiums last 80, 100 years, even more than 100 years.
And you still have Fenway Park and Wrigley Field. I mean, they've upgraded these ballparks. And Rafi hates the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
He loved the old Yankee Stadium. Right?
Well, that's you know, on the subject of Fenway Park, does everybody remember Larry Lucchino?
Sure.
Yeah, he helped John Moores to get Petco built.
Right.
And he had previously helped to get a Baltimore build ballpark.
Camden Yards.
Stadium. So he went to the Red Sox, and then he told the Wall Street Journal, you know, which is in Fenway Park, he told the Wall Street Journal, well, we don't want to hurt the taxpayers of Boston by asking for a subsidy. You know, it's what hypocrisy. Then the guy buys a stake in the Pawtucket minor league Red Sox.
Triple
A. And they want to move to Providence. And so then Lucchino is back asking for a subsidy. I mean, these guys.
Nice work if you can get it, huh, Don?
Yeah.
But let me ask you, Rafi, real quickly. You've been around the country. How many of these empty stadiums like the Astrodome and Silverdome exist today? Do you have a head count?
Oh, well, I mean, I don't have a specific headcount. I mean, the two biggest ones, or at least the two sort of big name ones, are definitely the Silverdome and the Astrodome. For various reasons. That's why I chose to profile those two. I mean, typically, it often makes sense for a community. It's just smarter to just demolish a stadium, because even though it's an upfront cost of something like $10 or $15 million to tear it down, it's better than spending the $10 million a year or losing the $10 million a year going forward in perpetuity to keep the thing running, because they do become white elephants and such a drain on the community. But that, just to keep San Diego for a second, to pick up on what Don was saying, it really is such an important moment for San Diego, I think.
Yeah.
You know, with the Chargers gone, and feel about them however you do, good riddance or root for afar, whatever, that's your choice. But whatever is done with that stadium now, whatever is done with that light, with that land, is going to be a big swing for the community either way. You know, there's a lot at stake. And I think it's really important to be very thoughtful in terms of what's done with it.
Yeah,
how will it benefit San Diego? How will it benefit the community?
Now, when you visited here, you went to Petco, did you visit Qualcomm too? Did you look at that stadium at all?
I was invited. I was invited to come work security when the Raiders were coming to visit.
Ah. Yeah, they were assuming you weren't local, so didn't know.
No, you don't want to be there for that.
Yeah, trust me.
Well, I would have done it just because, you know, my whole mantra going into this whole project was just say yes to everything. Yeah. No matter how crazy or scary something seems, just go ahead and do it. But unfortunately, I had a cousin who was getting married that weekend, and I couldn't do it.
Well,
it saved me for myself.
But my question was, from the look and feel of Qualcomm Stadium, I mean, it looks like it still looks pretty modern to me. I mean, I know that the seating and a lot of people complain about the concourse. That could all be remodeled and redone. But as far as the structure, I think Don makes the point. It's still a pretty good-looking building, I think, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, look, Don's exactly right, because especially if you do look at buildings like Fenway or Lambeau or Wrigley, you can see, I mean, look, it might be an expensive renovation, but renovations can be done. But typically it's when we're just throwing money as taxpayers at team owners, mm-hmm. they'd be dumb to turn it down.
Yeah.
And so of course they're going to say it's time to move on. It's time for the next big thing. We need to compete with the Cowboys, and the Falcons, and the Vikings.
Well, I'll tell you, let me ask you real quick. You've been to these states. We're seeing these video boards all around the upper decks or whatever with the – I mean, it looks like a circus to me now. Richard makes the point. Where, there's just too much going on visually, and it does detract from the game, I think.
Yeah, you can get hit in the head with a foul ball while you're watching all the activity.
Now, I do like the big screen where they have the kiss cam and all that's fun, and the kids dancing. I mean, that's entertaining, but you know, I've been to San Diego Gulls game. Have you been to any minor league hockey, Rafi? I mean, they entertain the crowd, you know, every minute, every second of every
game. So does minor league baseball.
Minor leagues across the board. They have to, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's where so much of that sensibility comes from.
Yeah.
I spent time talking with folks from the St. Paul Saints up in, you know, the Minneapolis area. And I don't know if you guys know this, but Mike Vec is one of the owners of that team. Mm-hmm. Mike Vec, of course, is the son of Bill Vec.
Right. Huh.
And
which team is he with?
St. Paul Saints.
Okay.
St. Paul Saints. I believe he has some ownership stake in a couple of other minor league clubs as well. I think maybe the South Carolina or the Charleston Sea Dogs or whatever they're called.
So
they really put it all out there. And
they got the dwarf tossing between innings.
No, the dwarf is dead. Joe.
No, the dwarf tossing.
Eddie Goodell.
Richard, I was talking dwarf.
Oh,
tossing.
Yeah, sure, of course, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
He had
a joke.
Tiny strike zone.
Yeah. Anyway, your point being about entertaining the fans, but at the pro level, I mean, look at these commercial breaks are way too long, you know, when you go to a professional game.
Yeah, the all-star games are now meaningless.
Yeah. But, they're not meaningless because the winner.
No, but they're pure exhibitions. They used to actually be serious.
No, but the winner determines who gets home field in the World Series.
The players
Series.
Don't
not
care.
Anymore.
Not anymore, Joe. That used to be.
They stopped that?
They stopped that.
That stopped this year.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Oh, my God.
Because that was stupid. I mean, that was just plain dumb.
So now they go by record?
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow, back to that. Okay, well, that's good to know.
Hey, Rafi, did you ever see, this is the most amazing artifact that I'm aware of in the country, 1992 Olympics, Stone Mountain, Georgia, next to Atlanta, built a tennis stadium specifically.
Tennis center, oh, yeah.
And it's never been used since.
It's looted over and, I didn't get a chance to visit there, even though I did spend a lot of time in Atlanta. But, right, they spent $22 million on that tennis center, and it's supposed to be, you know, a revitalizing focus for the community. And to Atlanta's credit, they did a good job in terms of trying to be pretty modular, pretty mm-hmm. temporary in terms of how they built things out. And at least they were able to turn, Centennial Stadium into Turner Field,
right.
which of course then, you know, the Braves just up and left 20 years later anyway, but they were at least trying to be conscientious in terms of thinking about the type of legacy they were leaving mm-hmm. instead of just draining the coffers of the community and leaving them behind with useless stadiums.
One quick point. Did you know when Joan Kroc passed, I believe she intended to give the city of San Diego the Padres for $1?
Yes.
And I think Major League Baseball shot that down, right? Because it would have opened.
They did it. Well, it was very – I think it was – to bring it a little bit full circle, I think that a lot of our stadium woes as communities are tied to that decision. Because if the community of San Diego was able to have ownership – of of the team in the way that, you know, the Packers have ownership of the Green Bay has ownership of the Packers,
right.
Or that colleges have ownership of their, you know, the local institutions, we would not be in a situation where a team could hold out and extort, you know, and threaten to leave
right.
A city because they would be owned by the city.
And the books would get opened
suddenly,
up and all these salaries.
Suddenly we would no longer have these escalating subsidies because we would be much more realistic and honest in terms of what we want to pay for them.
Yeah.
We would have a situation where we could have more pro stadiums, like, as Don said, like college stadiums.
Yeah.
Because we could say, well, this stadium is actually just fine.
Yeah.
We don't need all of this.
Anyway,
nonsense.
Yeah, we're getting ready to wrap here, unfortunately. Don, would you like to stick around for a little bonus track with us? Because I have some more questions
sure.
for you. All right. And Rafa, you're welcome too as well, but we'll leave that to, you know, the
No, I've talked enough. Don needs to get a few more words in.
Anyway, thank you, Rafi Cohan. Thanks so much for being
our
guest and author of The Arena. Folks, go out and grab that book. Don Bowder in Colorado will be talking to you on the bonus track, and you'll get that on iymoney.com. Thanks very much for being our guest. Richard, great seeing you. Justin Hart, our board operator, thanks for making it sound terrific. Thanks to Craig Blanke and Dave Sniff at KFMB for all their help. All these podcasts are commercial-free on iymoney.com. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Perfect, right?